bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into a Manic Monday on the Bet the Board podcast. Week 4, almost in the books. Of course, Lions Seahawks will wrap things up later this evening from the Pacific Northwest. Podcast powered by Bet Online. And Payne, as we go through some of the things that we saw on Sunday, have you been able to fully process everything you witnessed?
Yeah, it was a good week. The Bears showed up. That was a positive sign. The Texans, not so much. I was happy. It was a profitable Sunday. It was a profitable Saturday. And we just keep the train rolling. Move along.
The man on the other end of the line, you can follow him on Twitter, as always, at Payne Insider. You can follow me on Twitter, at Todd Furman. And remember, if you haven't already subscribed to the Bet the Board podcast on SoundCloud or iTunes, I honestly don't know what the hell you're doing. It's never too late to get into the ballgame. Listen to the podcast each and every week at our home at toddstake.com. And Payne, as we do every single Monday, we start with teams that impressed and or disappointed us over the weekend. I may as well let you get things kicked off right here, my friend.
Since I'm always positive, let's start with a team that's impressed.
Yeah, because everyone goes pain, and the first word association that pops in their head is Mr. Positivity and Mr. Sunshine. My ass.
Absolutely. The Giants, we were on them. Still a little terrified of the late game management. You run the ball into the line 3 times, kick your field goal, make it 17, 3-score game, get the hell out of Dodge. But aside from that, the Giants were able to establish a respectable ground game. Roughly 100 yards between the three, Jennings, Williams, and Vereen. The defense quietly making opponents one-dimensional, tied for number one in the NFL, 3.1 yards per carry allowed. And I think that was the biggest key this week. As pleasant a surprise as Tyrod Taylor has been, you make them throw the ball, you stop the run. They were able to do that. So I was very, very impressed with the Giants this week. They really controlled the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball, punched Buffalo in the mouth. And even when Buffalo loses, that's not something that happens to them. So the Giants were one of the most impressive teams to me this week.
Yeah, I think you talk about the Giants. This is a team who honestly could be 4-0 if it wasn't for some late-game miscues. They had a chance to beat the Cowboys, had a chance to beat the Falcons, and they didn't let those two heartbreaking defeats kind of derail their season. You mentioned the clock management. I would say the Giants' defense probably has been one of the more pleasant surprises as a unit. We didn't quite know what to expect without Jason Pierre-Paul in the pass rush, and they went up there and out-physicaled Buffalo at their own game. Payne, a team that impressed me, and we'll have to give Sam a shout-out for this, the Chicago Bears getting in the win column with a big 22-20 victory against the Oakland Raiders. Jay Cutler, weren't sure if he was going to go last week. Alshon Jeffrey out. But the Bears went out there, and they were the better team for extended stretches. And Bear fans told me that I was nuts saying you should be rooting for them to go 0-16 and get the first overall pick in the draft. But the Chicago Bears went out there, showed fight after getting blown out by Seattle the week before, and took advantage of a Raiders team on their second week of travel.
They did show some fight, but there's a lot of locker room material there. I think everybody knows what the Oakland Raiders are as an organization. And you look up, and everyone's aware of the point spread, and you see yourself a home underdog to the dysfunctional Raiders. Now, I know they're improving, but that's got to be motivation itself. That game should have been a blowout, honestly, but you get those, as good as Cutler did play, again, just costly mistakes, a fumble, an interception late, your horse Forte up to fumbles at midfield. That could have changed the complexion of that game. They did a good job defensively holding to 3, and the Bears did win, so that's a positive, but they just seem to continue to make mistakes at the worst times possible.
Remember when Charles Woodson said that we know Jay will throw us the ball? We know eventually he'll throw us the ball, and he's the one that picked Jay off yesterday.
I mean, he's only 97 years old out there playing defensive back for the Raiders, so it's a feather in his cap. But I'm sure we'll have some more comprehensive thoughts on the Bears and their matchup this week against a very angry Kansas City Chiefs team, but don't want to quite play spoiler. But Payne, any other teams, players, you name it, that impressed you over the weekend?
I think you have to go to the Panthers and another spot where pro bettors were opposite. And that's really, I'm really biased with that when I talk about teams that impress me, because I know the sharpest guys in the world are on a specific side. And if the other team kind of overachieves despite that, it just impresses me. They're now 4-0. I get it's been against Bortles, Mallett, Winston, and McCown. But their best defender's been out in the process. They don't have any weapons, and it's the Carolina Panthers. And it's more so Cam Newton. This guy's throwing the organization on his back each week. Numbers aren't gaudy at all, but they've been extremely efficient. And when you watch these games, any time the team needs a play, they need a spark, Cam does it for them. Game starts to get potentially where momentum's swinging in the opposite direction. Here comes a big drive. Here comes a big play. He just wills his team to victory, and I'm very impressed with Cam Newton.
I'll go one step further, and I'll talk about another quarterback that doesn't get enough credit either for what he means to the team and a side that remains undefeated, the Cincinnati Bengals. And you mentioned professional money and how much we respect a lot of the sources and contacts we have. So when you see a number starting to go, you typically expect a lot of these teams either to rise up to the occasion or play down to their opponent's standards. But Cincinnati, again, goes out there. They hang a crooked number on the Chiefs. Defensively, they stepped up, holding Kansas City to 7 field goals. I believe it's the first time it's happened in the NFL in something like 20 years that a team kicked that many field goals and wasn't able to get the win. Geno Atkins really anchoring the middle of that defensive line. And Cincinnati, with their running back by committee approach, A.J. Green, this team seems to be a force, and I'm not really sure if we should give them the division title now in the AFC North, but the question is, can the Bengals find a way to become one of the top 2 seeds and maybe get a bye, getting that monkey off their back in the postseason?
Yeah, that game was the definition of football Sunday. A lot of EPL-like field goal kicking there. Good in the red zone for Cincinnati. Didn't really impress me a ton. When you look at this game, Kansas City still outgained them. Tons of possession. Alex Smith, to me, was pretty impressive, 31 for 45, nearly 400 yards passing. To me, when that happens, wasn't a great performance to me. The score definitely wasn't indicative of what happened out there. You obviously have to be able to score touchdowns, and that's really what distorted this game for me. Not saying Kansas City was the right side, despite the sharp money, but that game a little misleading, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think we'll get a chance to break down Cincinnati in greater detail for a big showdown this upcoming weekend where they play host to Seattle. Of course, Seattle will be traveling out of their familiar time zone into the Midwest for breakfast football on a short week. Should give us a good indication, or at least something close, of what we're going to see from those teams. But Payne, we can't give too much credit without pointing our fingers and issuing some blame for a weekend filled with disappointment. And I'm going to let you lead this off as well.
I hate to pile on a team like this, but it's going to be the Jaguars. And I don't want to be harsh, because I think we see their big leap in the W column in 2016. But Gus Bradley, this is year 3 now. You get Bortles to throw for 300 yards. You have a 100-yard receiver. You get 105 yards on the ground. Your defense holds Goran Robinson to 2.7 yards per carry. It's the huge swing game. You're either a player at 2-2 in the AFC South, or you're 1-3 and forgotten about. And this was for first place in the division. You're facing a luckless Colts team, and you just crap the bed. You don't take that next step. And I think they really, really blew it. They missed an opportunity here to kind of have some relevance, get those Jaguar fans amped about something, and it just didn't happen. That was a game that I don't think you can lose. I understand they went into the game an underdog, but you're facing a 40-year-old quarterback. It's time to take that next step as a franchise.
I mean, if we're piling on football teams in the state of Florida, we may as well get on all 3 of them. Let's start with the Dolphins, and yet another pathetic performance from a team traveling across the pond. You saw a very workmanlike effort from the Jets. Miami all week, oh, we're out of our comfort zone, lack of familiarity, we don't understand the defense. You're professional athletes. Get your shit together, Miami, and start to play, or this season, which is already off the tracks, is only going to continue to get worse. And for the second time in as many weeks, Payne, you know this team much better than I do. It looked like they just didn't want to be out there and were out physical in the trenches by a division rival.
Well, they're not a physical team, so you can't, the Leopard can't change its spots. They're a soft football team. This isn't a good matchup on paper. They did show some fight late, a really, really phantom call on Devontae Parker. That touchdown gets in there. You're down 6 with about 5 or 6 minutes to go. So they did show some fight, some semblance there. But again, there's one guy I told you they couldn't lose at the beginning of the season. That's Brent Grimes. We'll see how significant that injury really is. It's not a team with a lot of depth. They didn't address some of those issues in the offseason. They spent their money on Nnamdi Kanu. We're recording this at 8 a.m. Todd time, so there's not much out there as we discuss. I know the big meeting between Ross and Philbin is today. I know the easy fan reaction, fire the guy. But you have to ask yourself, who is the replacement? Bill Lazor, his offense is averaging 15 points a game. It can't be that guy. Kevin Coyle, nobody likes him. Clearly not going to be that guy. When you look at the rest of the team, as an interim, maybe promote Darren Rizzi, who's a special teams guy. The players like him, but he's a special teams coach. So who are you going to replace? Clearly Philbin's not the long-term solution here. But I don't know if you fire him just yet. Philbin was handpicked by Stephen Ross. Stephen Ross had all of his buddies come together, and they said this was the greatest interview they've ever seen. And these are billionaire guys who interview candidates all day long. It also sends a really, really bad message to someone that you want to bring in next year that you're willing to fire a coach after four games.
Hopefully Philbin's day goes a little bit better, and I know this is a football-centric podcast, but Matt Williams, the manager of the Washington Nationals, was relieved of his responsibilities, and his team turned into quite the dumpster fire. The Dolphins appear headed in that direction as well. Tampa Bay Bucs, Payne, another disappointed me. I know that was the sharp side. We both had tickets on them, catching 3.5 against Carolina. We mentioned the Panthers, a team that we've typically faded, it feels like, every week so far this season. But what do you make of the Bucs? I know the yardage is a little bit skewed because they were in such comeback mode, but a team that felt like they self-destructed throughout, a 17-10 game, should have been 17-16 if Kyle Brinza makes a field goal going into the half and on the first series of the second half. But Jameis Winston, yet again, can't protect the football, and it seems like some of his development may be a bit stunted behind that offensive line.
Well, first of all, Lovie Smith isn't very good. That's just something that we kind of need to figure out and comprehend. He's not very good. The defense is outdated. But you got to start instilling confidence in some of your young players. And late in the first half, I understand you have Jameis Winston. He's turning the ball over a little bit. But you're at home. That's part of your home field advantage. There's 7 seconds to go, and you send out your field goal kicker who hasn't been very good. You have two big wide receivers that you can throw a fade pass to, a jump pass, and easily get another play in there. And he refused to do it. They send out the field goal kicker. You miss it, and you lose all your confidence and momentum of that drive. So there's a lot of misfortune. You're going to turn the ball over, you're going to lose. Could have been 17-16 easily coming out to the third quarter. You get a bad break with a fumble, and then it's returned for a touchdown, basically. I don't know what's going on in Tampa. It seems like everything continues to go against them, and that's tough for a young team. But I think there are going to be brighter days. I just don't know if they're going to be with Lovie Smith. I think the guy's a dud.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I know that they're a team that's going to be significantly undervalued in the betting markets, but these mistakes, as you mentioned, seem to pile up, and when you can't close out games, it's obviously difficult to actually cash tickets and stay around the number. But I guess when we talk about closing out games, here's a team that hasn't started games all that well. They found themselves in a 42-0 hole. Houston Texans, what the hell do we make of this team? I know you and I traded some notes during the game. Ryan Mallett being younger than Hoyer, but probably not the answer given what we've seen in a limited sample size. Hoyer comes in garbage time, at least shows a little bit of poise and moxie in the pocket. This team gets up and down the field. But the Houston Texans, where does this team go, knowing how much money they have invested in a defensive lineman? And this defense has probably been the most unimpressive unit on the field aside from their quarterback play.
It's time to throw in the towel on Ryan Mallett. We talked about it. I'm all for starting the younger guy, the guy with more talent, the guy that could be with the organization moving forward. But that isn't Ryan Mallett. And I think the first indication should have been that he's not that dude is when Bill Belichick throws in the towel. It's not a good sign if Bill Belichick can't make it work for a guy. Okay, you're now in year five with Mallett, completing 52% of his passes, more picks than touchdowns, 5 yards of completion. And while the defense has some nice names and some of the numbers still look very good, they're allowing points at the worst times possible, allowing 27 a game right now. And when you have Mallett or Hoyer as your quarterback, that's just not going to get it done. We did trade notes. I told you at the very beginning of the second quarter, I think it's time to bring in Hoyer. He did get some garbage time stuff going late, but I think he's the right move, and I don't think they gave him a fair shake. Granted, he is average, but when average people have bad days, it could look miserable, and that's what happened in week one. The leash needed to be a little longer, and I think they probably give him the rein moving forward.
Do you think if Tom Savage is healthy right now, we'd be talking about him as the starting quarterback for the upcoming game?
Not a big Tom Savage guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a team right now that just seems to lack identity for sure, and I'm not going to say Savage is the savior for the franchise in the least. Clearly, Houston needs to try and figure out their general direction on a number of particular fronts. Payne, a team that disappointed me, I'm going to throw out the Philadelphia Eagles yet again. We watch this team. They show signs. They show flashes. But 18 minutes and 52 seconds time of possession at this level not going to allow you to win a ton of football games. I know the Redskins needed a heroic late drive from Kirk Cousins in improbable fashion, but this Eagles team, with a winnable game coming up, they're still very much in the division race at 1-3. But good Lord, Chip Kelly, what the hell is going on in the city of brotherly love?
Really, Philadelphia wasn't good at all. They had two plays. One to Riley Cooper, one to Austin Miles, and that was about it. If you had Washington plus 3.5 earlier in the week, or even 3, you're sitting there watching this game unfold, and you are like, how are we going to lose this game? So it was nice to see Kirk Cousins take a positive out of this, rally his troops. Maybe this is a confidence boost for him and the Washington Redskins moving forward. But Philadelphia is what they are. They can't run the ball. We weren't high on them with DeMarco Murray back. I thought him being in there is kind of a downgrade. And you look at Darren Sproles, 4 carries, you know. Sproles needs to touch the ball. I know he's getting up there in age, but 4 touches all game long. You need more touches from Sproles.
It's just one of those things that's a little bit hard to stomach, and you try and figure out if you can't run the ball between the tackles, we hear all the time, use the screen game as an extension of your run game, and Philadelphia appears to have abandoned a lot of those key principles. Of course, like I said, a very winnable game this week against the Saints, but a side that appears to be in complete disarray, at least at this juncture. One last thing, Payne, before we put a bow on our impressive and disappointing performances of the weekend. Colin Kaepernick, is his time as an NFL quarterback done? I mean, clearly, this was a guy 5 yards away from potentially winning a Super Bowl. Now, I know he's under duress for extended portions of the game, and we saw Clay Matthews' comments to him, calling him not Russell Wilson, talking a little bit of smack during the game. But what do we make of him and the 49ers at this juncture?
Horrible head coach. Hate to say it this early in the season. He's a fiery guy. He can motivate, but he's not going to put together a comprehensive game plan. We, you know, rewind to last week, and we hear the comments from Arizona's defense where we knew where Colin Kaepernick was going. They only ran about 4 different pass plays. So it's time to reevaluate, and we've talked about this. This isn't anything new. They handed him a paycheck before they knew what he could do. They put training wheels on him the first few seasons, let him run around. Now, granted, he doesn't have the weapons he used to have, but you don't hand somebody with training wheels that much money and then the following year try to make him a pocket quarterback. I think his confidence is shot, not a lot of weapons. I think he's extremely limited. It'll be interesting to see if he can go to a system with a smart head coach that puts him in the right positions. Maybe it gives him a second chance, a lifeline as being an NFL quarterback. But right now in this specific spot and situation, it's not good for Kaepernick.
Philadelphia Eagles, baby. Let's see what Chip Kelly can do with Colin Kaepernick in his system. But I'm not sure 49ers fans are ready for the Blaine Gabbert era to get started just yet. For those just checking in, I don't know where the hell you've been the entire time, but the man on the other end of the line, he of Payne Insider fame, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me at Todd Furman. And remember, if you're not already subscribed to the Bet the Board podcast, please do so immediately on iTunes or SoundCloud, or you can check us out at toddstake.com. And Payne, we've seen the look-ahead lines. We talk about these all the time as a good barometer for where these numbers would have been without the week's worth of results, courtesy of the Westgate Superbook. And as we start to look at some of the numbers, I guess Thursday night's game with the Colts and Texans, Colts would have been listed as a 1-point favorite with a healthy Andrew Luck. What do we think? Do we think Luck's out there? And I know this is a game we'll talk about in much greater detail on Thursday when we reconvene, as we always do.
I believe Luck will be out there. From what I'm hearing, they thought they could beat the Jaguars without Luck. They'll give them a little extra time. You know, win a big game against the Jaguars, huge division game now on Thursday. I think Luck will be out there.
And 3 other games certainly off the board as well. Seattle at Cincinnati, Arizona and Detroit, and of course the Monday nighter between the Pittsburgh Steelers and San Diego Chargers. And Pete, as I kind of go through this list, I see not major adjustments being made after 1 week's worth of results, but the Ravens, they go from an 8.5-point chalk. Market opens them at 6.5, where it currently sits at Bet Online. The Chiefs, a 12-point favorite against the Bears. This number down to 10 right now at Bet Online. Either of those games surprise you that you've seen 2-point moves? The Ravens, of course, threw a key number, and this team extremely banged up on the offensive side.
In general, the early look at the card, it doesn't present a ton for me. You mentioned a lot of games still off the board. It's Monday morning. We're still doing a lot of research and gathering information. So to me, it looks like it could be a light week in general. But not really a surprise. Cleveland showed well across the country. We know that was a significantly sharp position. They do get the cover there. Baltimore, yeah, they eked out a win on national television on Thursday, but laying this kind of price with limited weaponry, Steve Smith, huge question mark. They bring in Chris Givens. They trade for him from St. Louis just to add another body, basically, to the offense. So I agree with this move down, you know, off the key number of 7. So it'll be an interesting game. We know Cleveland plays Baltimore. Fairly tough. There is no way this would open over a touchdown, in my opinion.
Are you a little bit surprised that the Patriots on a look-ahead line are 8.5-point favorites, and yet we see the market open up as just a touchdown chalk, New England coming off a bye, and Dallas off that heartbreaking Sunday night loss to the New Orleans Saints?
It does surprise me a bit. It really does. I think it's going to create some liability for the sports books, obviously. I don't think this should have been opened under a touchdown. I think we're seeing some gravitation towards 7.5, and I think that's probably a good number.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to get Dave Mason's take on Thursday as we go through it again. We knew there was sharp money on the 49ers against the Packers. It almost appears to the professionals, and as I reiterate all the time, we talk to as many groups and bettors as anybody out there, have a death wish to try and go against Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady with inferior football teams. And this day and age in the NFL, it just doesn't seem to be working. Had you blindly bet those two quarterbacks to start the year, you'd be sitting with an unblemished record right now.
Yeah, it's certainly tough to do. And then Dallas, again, we're now getting tape. We know what Brandon Whedon is. We now see what he is in this offense. One of his favorite targets in Lance Dunbar, 3 yards forward from the line of scrimmage, looks like he's going to be out now. And that could really limit this offense even a step further for Dallas and Brandon Whedon. Randall didn't really get things going Sunday night. The offensive line, what they would ideally like to do is just beat everybody up with the offensive line, run the ball, make throws easy for Whedon. That didn't seem to be the case. And when you can't run on this Saints front, it could be trouble for Dallas moving forward. The quicker Tony Romo could get back, the better. But what does that look like now? Week 11? So it's going to be a long time from week 5 to week 11 operating with Brandon Whedon at the helm.
Yeah, my fantasy team could definitely use Tony Romo back under center. This whole experiment, starting Nick Foles last week, Blake Bortles this week, good Christ, it's become a revolving door, hopefully in winning efforts against a prominent media personality this week. And, Payne, we talk all the time about these games and where the market's going to head, how things are going to try and settle in. I think we've done an excellent job throughout the course of the season so far, letting people know, even with some of these games. And we took a little bit of flack, people going, oh, well, you guys love the Texans. Well, yeah, when you tell people on Thursday to take 6.5, the game closes 4, the players do have to go out there and perform. But in addition to the 18 to 20 hours a day that I feel you spend handicapping these football games, we added a new segment last week, a movie review piece. And Sam, I don't think people were real happy with the suggestions you came up with. What were they, flea flicker? What the hell else did you throw out there for us?
Don't bring me down with this awful idea to start with. It was a bad idea. It was almost worse than backing the Texans.
Yeah, well,
I like the movie review, Sam, Stan, whatever
fine,
you're going by
fine,
today.
Fine, fine. We'll do the movie
review. Yeah, reviews. The movie review feature will stay, as a lot of people have told me they agreed with my assessment of Black Mass, that it was slow and uninspiring. So, Payne, you lost a little bit of credibility with our listeners. But we took a softer stance this week on our chosen movie review. Do you want to reveal with the loyal listeners what movie we elected to watch, mainly because I couldn't see No Escape because it apparently wasn't out in theaters anymore?
I think the key to here is most of our audience is male-dominated, so this is going to be a tip. This movie, you kind of con the lady friend into saying, hey, I'll go see a chick flick if you watch football with me, and it's not really a complete chick flick, and that's The Intern with Robert De Niro. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty good. Maybe a 6.8 out of 10, 7 out of 10 in that area.
See, See, I'm going to go 7 out of 10 for this. I actually thought the movie was entertaining. I felt, like you mentioned, you know, you get conned into having to play this compromise game with the women in our lives. So this movie I found very entertaining. I thought De Niro did an outstanding job. You talk about actors, and we're not film critics by any stretch of the imagination. A far cry from some of the roles we saw De Niro play in his younger days in Casino and Goodfellas and everything else, which kind of leads me to my next question for you. Your favorite De Niro movie of all time, Payne, throw it out there. And Sam, you can weigh in on this topic too, despite you telling us this movie segment sucks.
Ugh, that's tough. I'm not really sure. I'd have to think about that one.
You got some time. This podcast isn't over just yet, but you know we're going to need that before the end. I mean, for me, Goodfellas, I think hands down has to be the my favorite De Niro movie. I liked it better than Casino.
I could buy that. I'm a big Heat fan.
I figured you were a big Silver Linings Playbook guy.
No. not my thing. Not my thing. It wasn't a bad movie though. But definitely worth seeing The Intern. Anne Hathaway. I wasn't a big fan of hers. She's not bad. She's not, not bad looking. Before we get to the Monday night preview, we have some breaking news out of Miami. It's official. Joe Philbin has been canned. Will be replaced by Dan Campbell as the interim head coach. He was the former tight ends coach. This is quite a reach. In my opinion, quite a reach.
Is this, Payne, is this waving the white flag on the 2015 season for the Dolphins, basically admitting, hey, we're done and we're just going to go out there and play out the stretch?
You have to think so. I mean, when you look at this team, clearly they weren't going to promote Kevin Coyle or Bill Lazor. Darren Rizzi seemed like a good fit. That being said, Dan Campbell, the tight ends coach, his position with Jake Stonebrenner basically coming off the practice squad and in general has been performing very, very well. But this feels like waving the white flag. This is a guy that has no experience, in my opinion. Very young, 39 years old. It feels like you're waving the white flag here. Now you get the substitute teacher in. We'll see if he can kind of reel in all the students here and get them to play. This just feels like you've thrown in the towel already.
It seems awfully interesting. I mean, we know how bad the Dolphins were. We talked about earlier on just this podcast about a team that showed no fight, weren't a physical football team. But I know that, like we've said before, you follow this team pretty closely and know, and if it comes as a surprise to you that the organization wanted to change directions after only the quarter mark of the season, it speaks volumes for where the Dolphins think this season is going as it quickly gets derailed. I guess a team whose season, though, Payne, is probably still hanging in the balance right now, the winless Lions. They head out west to take on the Seahawks tonight. As it currently sits, we're talking about Seattle, a 9.5-point favorite. You do have to lay $1.15 at BetOnline. A total of 43 on this game between the winless Lions and the one-win Seattle Seahawks on primetime.
Big game, obviously, for the Seahawks. They got the win last week, but this is one they're really going to need. Appears Marshawn Lynch is out. Rawls came in mop-up duty against the Bears last week, did a very, very good job. For me, though, looking at this game, and I just have a tough time backing Jim Caldwell. I think that's going to be an issue. There still are components to this Detroit team that make this a game. I think they have some weapons. When you really break down Seattle, they finally got Jimmy Graham out of purgatory last week, kind of acclimated him into the offense a little more. But just 6 points at halftime, momentum changed on the opening kickoff. It really wasn't a great offensive performance, and when the offense is struggling, laying 10 to anybody is a tough, tough task.
What do we make of Seattle's offensive line issues early in the season? Clearly that was a unit we knew was going to look a little bit different with that trade for Jimmy Graham, shipping Max Unger, the often injured kind of rock of that offensive line. I mean, is this a unit that we think is going to get better as the season goes on, or is it going to continue to be a liability for Seattle when you talk about their offense's inability to score points in bunches?
It couldn't get any worse. You know, I think there will be some improvements when you kind of get guys that you're plugging and playing, new guys in different positions that they're not used to. The offensive line needs to be a one cohesive unit. So that's going to improve over time with repetition. It couldn't be any worse. I think things will get going moving forward a little bit from that side of the ball. But Detroit still has a decent defense, even though Sue left town. For me, when you look at this game, there's going to be professional money on Detroit at double digits, at 10. There's a few still out there in the market. not sure how long they last. Clearly, this is going to be a one-sided public affair on the Seattle Seahawks. It might keep that number intact, but there are going to be professionals on Detroit. And I think when you take one step further, the under makes some sense. When you really look at Seattle's defense with Cam Chancellor back Monday night, the 12th man, I think they'll be pretty good. And then obviously Seattle's offense, we just don't think they're there yet. The key to going under in this game is obviously Matthew Stafford. Is he going to turn the ball over? Is he going to make that mistake? And when you have a total this low, you can't have that. But for me, I think you're going to look at a correlation between dog and under.
Yeah, and you talk about Stafford. I guess Joique Bell expected to miss. I know we didn't hit on his absence. Do we think Detroit is going to do something similar to what the Bears did, really work to establish a ground game, pound Amir Abdullah, and shorten this contest up a little bit and forcing Seattle's defense to play honest? You know, otherwise they get the chance to pin their ears back and just kind of come after the quarterback.
Yeah, I'm not sure you can pound Amir Abdullah. I don't know if he's built for that. Maybe in a one-game kind of phase here on a Monday night, but we saw last week how much they passed the ball. This wasn't a game that they were down in. I mean, very, very marginally down. 2 points heading into the fourth quarter, and they just kind of refused and gave up on the run. That'll be the big question mark here on Monday night in the 12th man. Can the offensive line hold up? I think Amir Abdullah gives them a little more quickness. Maybe they can use him more in the pass game, the screen game, to kind of help that bad run offense. If you can get them out in space a little bit and do things to move the team forward in that direction, it'll be a big help, slow down that Seattle pass rush.
And one last thing, Payne, before we put a bow on the Monday podcast. When we talk about totals in the NFL and the transition we've seen to a more pass-oriented game, teams that potentially get down, when you're looking at making your wager, are you typically splitting between first half and full game? Or when you're handicapping thought process to kind of give people a glimpse of what goes on before you finally arrive at a potential decision on any of these games?
It just depends how much I like the game. You know, we saw week one, we really, really, really loved the Baltimore under week one. That was simply just getting a ton of money down, first half, full game, did not matter for us. But when you kind of break down some of these games and look towards whether deciphering going first half or full game, one thing that you really have to understand is the first half is going to be more dictated and predicated on what these teams want to do, their approach, their game plan to that specific week. When you talk about a second half, a team could be down. You kind of have to mold your game plan towards the pace of the game. Are you down 10 points? It's going to be more of a passing thing, and it kind of becomes fluid, and there's a little more question on how the game could unfold. The first half, you kind of have a better idea of what these teams' approaches are going to be, and they're going to stick to them for the most part.
He's one of the best in the business, folks, and he's here with us each and every week. That's Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter, my loyal co-host from day one. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. Remember, please sign up, SoundCloud, iTunes. Visit us, toddstake.com, each and every Monday and Thursday for the Bet the Board podcast throughout the NFL season. Best of luck, whatever your wagers may be, on Detroit, Seattle this evening. And we'll be right back here same time on Thursday. And hopefully we'll see you at the window.